Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of In the Eyes of Truth, and with us again is Mark Sloboda, and we are here to discuss, well, what else is anybody else discussing, besides the insanity of Trump? And it's been a couple of weeks since we talked, and a lot's happened in a couple of weeks, and I don't think any of it's good. But in your honest memory, opinion, historical knowledge, have you ever seen a campaign so badly planned, so badly misinterpreted, and so floundering as Trump?
Stanislav, thanks for having me. It's always an honor and a pleasure to be in the Eyes of Truth. I certainly can't easily recall one. I mean, the U.S. has had some military blunders, certainly, but this one, I mean, it really takes the cake. And from everything that we know, that seems to be principally the fault of Trump himself, because we were at least told through the mainstream media, for what that's worth, that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff did warn the president that this was not going to be likely not going to be a cakewalk, and that it might be more difficult. And we don't know what else he said, but obviously he expressed some reservations and warnings. We are told that U.S. intelligence, whatever we may think of them, did the same. And Trump, evidently, colluding with his close cabal of Christian Zionists and others. We had the word that his two closest, his only diplomats, apparently, Steve Witkoff, his real estate buddy, and Jared Kushner, his twink son-in-law. Anyway, a British diplomat spoke to the British press and recently gave his assessment of them as "quote unquote" Israeli assets.
Yeah, couldn't see that one coming.
Yeah,
to Zionists.
He evidently. I mean, I'm sure there were other people that were encouraging this along. I mean, Lindsey Graham is have you? I mean, he's happier than a teenage girl at her Sweet 16 party. I mean,
he probably feels like a teenage girl.
Yeah. So, I mean, or at least he was when it started. I don't know if he feels the same way now. But yeah, they ignored essentially all military advice they were getting from the military itself. They ignored intelligence. Trump doesn't read either military or intelligence assessments, we are told. He doesn't read, period. Right? Let's just put an end stop after that. But, his, shall we say, visual presentations are shortened and dumbed down to the extent where NBC told us this last week that where he gets his views of what's happening in the conflict in Iran are composed of a 2-minute video clip a day of the biggest explosions that the U.S. is causing in Iran, and that's it. The man is an uneducated, egotistical, megalomaniacal moron. And I don't know how else to say it. I mean, there were people that hoped for whatever reason that Trump 2.0, because we already had a Trump 1.0, but that somehow might be different. I mean, and then it's different, all right? But
yeah.
I mean,
yeah, 1.0 didn't go into Iran.
it's not necessarily in a good way. I warned people of that right away. I said, yeah, I mean, it may mean that the U.S. stops directly firing ballistic missiles into Russia itself, but it'll be bad in its own way. And that has reached its culmination, or I don't know, maybe there's further, down the spiral to go from here. But right now, this mission is an absolute mess. Trump riding a neocon Viagra high after that little game in Venezuela, which we know had nothing to do with the military. They just dr flew in unopposed to pick Maduro up and flew out, right? This was a CIA op from beginning to end. They co-opted the Quisling Delcy Rodriguez and other members, probably Vladimir Lopez and others of the Venezuelan government, who turned Trump, or turned Maduro over to Trump, and that was it. And maybe they thought they were going to have more freedom. Maybe they believed that, oh, if you just give us Maduro, we'll leave you alone. I don't know. If maybe they were that stupid. I don't know what the story is, whether it's corruption or blackmail, who knows? But Venezuela is now, an effective colony. And at least for the last few months, a pretty compliant colony of the United States. And Trump thought that that was going to be repeated in Iran. And that was, again, ignorance. Anyone who has the slightest bit of objectivity could tell you that Iran is not Venezuela, that Iran is whatever some people, for whatever reason, don't like. Iranian society and the political system there. But the bottom line is, it is a political system. It is composed of institutions, not individuals, not even the supreme leader. And they conducted decapitation strikes again, trying to wipe out the political and military leadership. And I think it needs to be said, the political and military leadership were stupid enough to gather in all one place while a U.S. fleet was off of their coast, preparing for an attack, and they did get wiped out, in the first hours of the attack. And not you could say that it might have been some Shia martyrdom cult or whatever, except that their family, I mean, the supreme leader's family was, wife, children, grandchildren, we're all there as well. So I don't think that doesn't even make any sense to me. So whatever it was, however, they were smart enough to order four layers of succession for each top political and military leadership post, so the next person just stepped in. And if anything, I would say that since the initial strikes, Iran's government has shown not only remarkable unity and decisive action, but perhaps better than before. Their command and control was like that, right? They responded immediately. They've re responded ever since then. This devolved military decision making with this mosaic, defense strategy, it seems to be working. The political leadership, they keep Iran, Israel keeps conducting assassinations. Larijani was killed last week. The Secretary of the National Security Council, who we are told was effectively running the country during the military, during the attack, and yet after his death, nothing changed. Right? That we can tell. The next person stepped up. They're still fighting back, and everything has gone wrong since then. They didn't get the regime change they expected within hours or days. In fact, they got pretty much the opposite. They've got a more hardline, more cohesive, more fighting spirit leadership now than I think they had when on you know when the strikes began. And their response has been asymmetric in so in at least a couple extremely successful ways. The first one, of course, was the nuclear option of closing the Strait of Hormuz, or at least selectively closing the Strait of Hormuz to its opponents and their allies in this conflict. And the U.S. has had no plans for. No, nothing. They had nothing. They have done nothing for weeks now, to try to force open the Strait of Hormuz. So now, admittedly, that would have been difficult, but they had obviously have no plans for it. And I mean, Trump was told, we are told that he was told that Iran could close the Strait of Hormuz. And he said, ah, there'll be regime changed within a few hours and they won't do
Exactly.
it. Why? Most likely because he didn't want to believe, right,
Right,
that it
right.
would happen. He didn't want those consequences. Well, those consequences came really, really fast. So
Yes.
that is in that is coupled with this time around, because this is in many ways just a continuation, not even a repeat, a continuation of the US-Israeli attacks on Iran of last June. Very quickly became a long-range strike war of attrition again. And instead of just targeting Israel, Iran has targeted all of the U.S. Gulf state Arab allies who are hosting U.S. military bases from which those attacks are being carried out from. And anything that is hit in Iran, they very quickly strike back. They have that retaliatory capability with ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, hypersonic missiles, long-range strike drones, you name it. And they take that and a bit more, right? I mean, it's not
Right,
even
right.
tit for tit, it's tit for tat. I mean, it's a little bit, I routinely see a little bit of escalation on every retaliation, and they've been very effective at it. Now, no one should expect that Iran is going to destroy Israel, right? Or to, defeat the United States in a military way. They've gotten their wounds in, right? And certainly the US has pummeled Iran. I mean, there's no question. They've done a lot of damage to both military, civilian, economic, assets within the country. But Iran is able to keep up. So their asymmetric strategy of not, trying to militarily defeat the US and Israel, which would be stupid, is to instead attack the global energy markets and thus the global economy
Right.
and make both scream until the US and Israel stop. And I think that it isn't, they've been doing it extremely well, as far as I've can see now. They didn't rush out and lay mines all over the Strait of Hormuz. They didn't need to do that. They understood that all they would need to do is make a few examples and declare a new order, who can pass through and who can't. And the insurance companies are not going to challenge that,
Well, it's
right?
not just the
And
insurance companies. The crews aren't going to go through it
the
and get
crews
shot.
aren't, of course, yeah. The crews don't want to be, well, a few have tried and they've paid the price for it. But also, the U.S. Navy, Trump then believed that the U.S. Navy would be able to quickly clear up the matter and escort ships through and stop it. And the U.S. Navy was like, no, we're not going in there. It's a chicken shoot. Are you kidding? And when.
Suicide Alley.
Yeah, so yeah, they would have to run the gauntlet of drones and ballistic missiles and cruise missiles and anti-ship missiles and sea mines and everything else. And they said, no, that's suicidal. We're not doing that. And then Trump tried to rope in all of the US's Gulf allies, the NATO allies, Australia, South Korea, Japan, and everyone's like, no, that's it. You got this. You got this. We're good.
I particularly like the pressure he applied to Starmer. You're a loser. Yeah, you're a loser.
So,
Junior
what
high.
we see is not just a lack of a real strategy or planning, but actually the willful ignoring of his own military and intelligence's warnings and advice. And that has led, the U.S. to the situation where it is now, where a regional power is, I mean, it's not quite correct to say that they have the US over a barrel, right? That would might be too much, but they certainly have the US in a very bad position with no good options at this point, right? The only smart option at this point would be for the US to look for an exit ramp and, for Trump try to spin it and declare victory. But of course he's not doing that. And now they're doubling down with sending, I don't know, Marine Expeditionary units in the 82nd Airborne into,
Well, it's only one brigade of 82nd Airborne so far.
into what? A suicide squad mission,
Yeah,
right? You know, and
basically. Absolutely.
I mean,
Suicide.
we're not talking the first movie, we're talking the second one, right?
We're the first team of the second one, where they all get on the beach and get wiped
Yes,
out. Yeah, that part.
exactly.
Yeah,
That's the
exactly.
one.
Not the
That's the
covert
one.
guys that go in later,
Yeah.
but the first charge. Yeah,
So, I
that's.
mean, this is a mess for the United States.
Oh, yeah.
Russia and China have got to be sitting back eating popcorn. Russia, of course, benefits. The price of oil, the price of gas, the price of fertilizer, the price of aluminum, everything is going through the roof on
The
those
price
commodities that Russia
of
also uses.
grain is going to go up.
Grain,
Midsummer is going to
absolutely.
fly up.
Agricultural, right? So, and US, again, I fail to understand the stupidity here. I was shocked. I was surprised and shocked last year when the US and Israel, well, Israel starting, US joined in to, drop some bombs, declare victory, and force a ceasefire, which is Iran at the time accepted. Why they did that? Because I knew that they didn't have enough air defense capability in general and interceptors in particular. I knew they didn't have it. I mean, the numbers were there, right? I'm sure there's some, smoke, but
Right,
generally
right.
that was pretty clear. And I've been saying this for more than a year now. Well, more than a year, that the US Achilles heel is air defense, air and missile defense, right? Not just the capability, and I think we have a it's perfectly clear now what Ted Postol at MIT has been saying forever is that the Patriots sucks.
Oh, it's always sucked. That
Yes.
unfortunately is nothing new.
It has never been a good system.
No, no.
On top of that, the military industrial complex production of the PAC-3 interceptor, right? The THAAD interceptor, which is even more abysmal. They make less than 100 of them a year, and then they only
Oh
have a
yeah, it's
handful of
like
those systems
nine a
out there.
month at $12 million a pop.
Standard Missile 3, Standard Missile 6, right? All of the principal interceptors of the US are overpriced and produced in, I mean, literally handfuls of missiles, right? Their production is so low, it's stunning.
Well,
It's like the US never really expected to fight any type of peer or near peer competitor.
you know one of the reasons why they're so expensive and why production's so limited, they do it by hand because the U.S. military loves this contracting concept called cost plus.
Man,
So you we
cost plus and produce on demand. Well,
right. So if we decide your profit margin's 10%. So you got to make this as expensive as possible to get as much money as possible out of it. So we'll just do it by hand. We'll just smack the missiles together by hand, quite literally.
the corruption is baked into the system. So,
Exactly.
I mean, it was clear. And last June, when they stopped, and Trump flew in, dropped some bombs, declared victory. Why? To save Israel's ass. Why?
Yep.
Because they were already out of interceptors. An Iranian that weren't working very well to begin with. We all saw David's boomerang in action, and they were exhausted. And Iranian ballistic missiles and cruise missiles and drones were penetrating Israeli airspace, military, economic targets at will. And what, 8 months later, and I'm like, they're not really going to do this because they have not had any chance to rebuild their stockpiles, right? And then we had the word, right, that not only was it a shortage of interceptors, but they also had critical shortage of standoff munitions, of
Yep.
Tomahawks, of JASSMs, right, of anything they would need. to conduct an aerial campaign. And we're right back there. They've burned through all the tomahawks that fleet had, and they're just about now out of JASSMs. And Iran still has some air defense capacity left, right? Even if we saw video, which I'm pretty sure was incredible, right? Of a man pad taking down an F-18. And we know that Russia has flooded Iran with man pads
Oh,
on
they were
top of.
specifically designed for that. But there's they have a new loitering munition missile, loitering munition specifically designed as an anti-aircraft missile. So you pop them up there
Yes.
and they just wait for something to fly by in
I've
ambush
seen that
mode.
as well. I've seen that as well. So they have air defense capacity left. So the US is not able to enter Iranian airspace and drop JDAMs at will, which if they were able to do that, that would be bad for Iran,
Oh,
right?
yeah,
Let's be clear. That would be terrible. Yeah, JDAMs, gravity bombs, old dumb. They could do that forever. They could literally turn Iran into a smoking ruin then. But they can't do that. They still can't do that, except in a few isolated areas. And Iran has been able to preserve enough of its missile and drone launch capability, right? All Trump's pronouncements about 90%, blah, blah, blah. Reuters came out yesterday and said, actually, we can only confirm 30%. And
And that's a questionable.
these under mountain fortress missile cities,
Oh,
that have received, not even the amount of attention they deserve. I mean, they have built missile and drone construction and launch facilities under 500 meters of granite, right? With an underground subway systems to bring missiles from inventory, up to launch bays with doors that open, the launcher comes out, fires, they pull back down, slam the doors shut. Right, if a few of those tunnels, launch tunnels, get blown up, they've got other op, they've got multiple ones, and then once the bombing stops, they just go out and clear them up and start again. And it's not like one, right? It's not like one Bond villain fortress missile city. They've got at least 10, maybe a dozen of them. And some of them are interconnected under deserts. I mean, they've been preparing for this conflict. They haven't been effing around for decades now. These aren't holes in the ground. These are sophisticated engineering feats. And Americans, they have a very blinkered propaganda vision of Iran and Iranians in their head, and they just are incapable of conceiving this. So Iran is able to pace themselves. And again, they don't have to defeat the US and Israel militarily. They have to survive with their government and political and social system intact, which they've done, and all the calls of regime change, except for Trump and a rare few moments of delusion, have vanished now. Right.
Absolutely.
So they have to survive, and because of the power imbalance and the declared intention of regime change at the beginning, at least, then they win. They survive, they win. Right. The other is to inflict enough damage, yes, on US military bases in Israel, but more importantly, on the Gulf state allies, their infrastructure, and the global economy by the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, and potentially now the Strait of Bab el-Mandeb, with the Houthis, Ahrar Salah entering the chat. That is an escalatory step they can yet to take up the ladder, up the escalatory
Absolutely.
ladder. Again, the US couldn't really stop the Houthis last year, right?
Oh, no, they defeated him. Don't you remember Trump told us
I remember him saying that. I remember US carriers just playing whack-a-mole for wasting more of those same tomahawks and other critical munitions for a couple of months, and then getting out of the Red Sea. So I mean, it's a There's no good options here. And the
No.
ground game, I mean, that's just, it's
Suicide.
madness. It's madness.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you and many of your viewers out there remember, the Iraq War 1 and 2, right? Around 800,000 troops total for the first one, another 500,000 for the second time around, taking a half a year more to put together. And Iran is a country 4 times the size of Iraq with 3 times the population and considerably more political unity and loyalty, if only for religious reasons. And I think it's as much nationalism as it
More
is
nationalism, yes.
Shiite. It's madness. I mean, again, pull up simple geography. Pull up a topographic map of Iran. It's essentially Big Mountain. That's it.
It's a fortress.
It's a fort. Yeah, I mean, it's madness to think that they can achieve this.
I'll tell you, not only do I remember those wars, I helped plan the second one. My small role in there, but I was in staff, 18th Airborne Corps, and we were preparing for that. We were doing our part, on the march to Baghdad, which, by the way, all things considered, considering half the Iraqi army never left their barracks, it had been bought
Yes,
off by
the
the CIA,
CIA. Yeah,
22
a lot of
days to
people
reach
don't know
Baghdad.
that. A
Yeah,
lot
they
of
don't.
people don't understand how much the CIA, as it was in Venezuela and Libya, and elsewhere, that it, in Iraq, the military victory was, at least extremely assisted by co-opting half,
Absolutely.
at least 2/3 of the Iraqi military into not fighting,
And
and Syria.
it still took 22 days for the US military to reach Baghdad. 22
So,
days. It's not that far. I mean, really, realistically speaking. Yeah, 22 days.
I mean, the U.S. doesn't have good options. They can't back down and just go away, because then the Strait of Hormuz is under Iranian control, and I mean, under complete Iranian control, right? That they can't accept that. The Arab states are now, whatever they may have thought originally, and that's not quite clear, because there have been contradictory statements, and I don't believe everything that comes out of Israel and Axios necessarily. But whatever, now it seems pretty clear that they're saying, well, now you have to finish it. Whatever they may have thought or not thought originally, a little bit opaque, but now they it's gone so far that they cannot, the security situation for them, under a Middle East under effective Iranian hegemony would be unacceptable to them. So they're going to fund the US. I mean, we've heard the shakedown that they're now running. Trump will charge them 2.5 billion to stop the war, and 5 trillion to continue the war.
Yeah, I saw
Uh,
did
which
you
is
hear about the
so
other
true.
idea that several senators were pushing to make a new canal around
Oh yeah,
instead of the
with
Strait
nukes.
of
Yeah, I
with
mean,
28 nuclear weapons through the UAE across the mountains into Oman? Oh my God, these guys are insane.
This war, dealing with a bunch of incompetent, zealous religious fanatics on
Would
one
you mean the
hand,
ones in Washington and Tel Aviv?
and Iran
I
on the other.
don't think those guys are quite that fanatical compared to
I mean, you could say, I mean, at least your enemies are being stupid, right? And, let them defeat themselves. Except they're still in possession of the heights, of what is in many ways still the most powerful country in the world. Although they keep this up, it won't be for long. I mean, the hard geopolitical limit of U.S. air and missile defense and their critically low level of standoff munitions, which was already bad, is now at a point where it's such a geopolitical hard limit. If China really wanted to take Taiwan militarily,
Go for it.
they could go for it. I mean, they don't want to. That's unfortunately. That's
Well, I
the
don't know.
thing.
I mean, as the U.S. is going down the toilet drain at
Right.
this point, militarily, China wants not wants, they may start reconsidering at this point. What's to
I think
lose?
the Russian government has got to be poised at this point between launching a major military offensive that they hope will finally big C collapse the Ukrainian military, or just like, Jesus, this thing's going to collapse of its own. They can't even get financial support for it from Europe at this point. So they must really feel in the driver's seat. They
Oh,
must feel really maybe they're getting too comfortable even because the situation is so bad. The Telegraph ran an article last week talking about Zelensky jetting around to various European capitals begging for attention, and
you should start playing piano again.
the headline was a direct riff off of that 80s Simple Minds anthem featured in the Breakfast Club. And the Telegraph called it Zelensky's Don't You Forget About Me tour.
Your political career is in trouble when you become a mem.
Well, I mean, there is that in general, but on the other hand, Trump's entire career is extremely postmodern in the sense that his entire career is a meme, and he made that
Yeah.
successful. But yeah, for
Absolutely.
most other politicians, yes.
And I'll tell you this from the military side, because I've got lots of contacts, obviously, on the military side in Russia. Oh yeah, the generals want a big arrow movement, and it's not just the generals; it goes all the way down. Everybody wants that victory splash forward, the big attack. I just got to be massive pressure on the Kremlin right now, from the military, from the conservatives. Just whack these moles and get it over with.
Well, I mean, I think there's one thing that this conflict has demonstrated is that the rules of war have changed. I think the era of big maneuver warfare against anyone who has drone capability, which could even be non-state actors at this point, right? If they get involved enough with it. Drones have really changed the face of modern warfare, right? Drones, precision munitions, and 24/7 drone and satellite surveillance. You simply can't build together a critical mass of troops or equipment for a big push without them being identified and targeted immediately, which is why both sides in this conflict are now using infiltration tactics, both for offense and for counterattacks. And it would really shock most people to understand how small the number of troops is that are engaged on the front of actual physical human troops right now that are engaged on the front lines at any given time is. Because it is. I mean, the amount of troops that are actually engaged in what you would consider, encounter battles is very small. At the same time, because of drones and precision strikes, there really isn't a tactical rear anymore,
No, there
right?
isn't.
It's almost to the point where there isn't an operational rear.
I've been in a tactical rear, and I've been on the edge of the operational rear, and I've had drones over my head, enemy drones. So yeah, it's. But I'll tell you, on the defensive side for the Ukrainians, the problem too is they don't control the air. And clustering anything more than three or five troops in one small area is a FOB. It's a FOB. Sooner than later there will be a FOB and there'll be a big crater, and you can't put a platoon into a line anymore because there's not going to be left anything left of that platoon. One, two FOBs, and that's it.
It's we heard so much ridiculous propaganda bullshit about Wunderwaffe, about the next Western wonder weapon that was going to win this war. Well, we have known what the real wonder weapons of this war are from the beginning, and they're the FAB, the Garand, the Lancet has played a big role along the way. These are the systems that have even the Sinsapyok have particularly with the extended range have really changed the nature of this conflict.
Well, there's one more. The 3 to 5 man fire team that's breaking through and taking that objective that used to be taken by a platoon.
The infiltration tactics. Yeah, again, people keep wanting, again, big arrow offensive. They want big dramatic results, and they want tanks and troops, and I don't know if that's really possible anymore.
It may be with Ukraine because it's just so weakened at this point, and
It's
along a lot of
getting there.
lines.
It it's getting there. But
A year ago, absolutely not.
no, there, well, people have been talking since the beginning of this conflict. Some people, some well-meaning cheerleaders, I would say, some of them with military and intelligence backgrounds, who predicted, that the entire thing would be over 2 months, and have reliably predicted that every 2 months since then, that the Ukrainian army was about to big C collapse and everything. And cheerleaders have their place. That's not to take away from that. Morale important, information warfare and everything. But serious analysts, I think, need to have a little more honesty, or a little more, shall we say, realist and realistic assessment of how things are really on the contact line on the battlefield. And Russia can have every advantage, and they do have every advantage, from artillery to drone quantity to drone quality to FABs, air superiority, manpower, logistics, manpower, everything. It's still a hard slog, because
It
ultimately
is.
you have to clear every building and every friggin' room, and it takes time, and there's still a cost involved. And people want the war to be over yesterday, and there's a lot of well-meaning armchair quarterbacks out there who continually get frustrated by the pace of things.
And
And
the worst part about it too is we're fighting ourselves. And the other side are Russians, even if slightly or radically demented, but they have the exact same stubbornness, the same
they do.
creativity. And
That's a
if this were
very valid
French
point.
or Brits, even Brits, they would have broken by now.
Yeah,
They would have absolutely broken by now.
they're Slavs, and more than Slavs, they're, other than Galicia, right? They're essentially Russians, right?
And just a stubborn, blockheaded when it comes to that. Just I would don't want to surrender. Just because.
Endurance and suffering. And it is always amazing to me, because we know that now, by far, the majority of the Kiev regime's troops are press ganged, right? I mean, that's not a quite. I mean, maybe at the beginning that was only somewhat true. Now it's completely. But they still will fight when cornered in a hole, and they have to fight and defend the people next to them, and so forth. Now, part of that, of course, is the judicious use of the peppering everything everywhere with Banderites, who will shoot anyone who surrenders at the first opportunity, and blocking units and the like. But still,
Methamphetamines play a big game, a big role of that too. Combat drugs.
there's that. But yeah, the endurance, the willing to endure suffering, it is a trait of the Eastern Slavs that is beyond what certainly modern Western cultures would be able to endure.
Absolutely.
They
But
don't
wait.
have the warrior ethos.
Going into this whole drone point, the Israelis are having a big problem in their newly annexed province of southern Lebanon because the Hezbollah just doesn't agree with it. So the Israelis have launched their big push, and they've lost or have had damaged or about 100 Merkavas of various models
Yeah, I've
by
seen that.
drones. Have you noticed those Merkavas have no grills on them, no nothing? It's like they came out of storage, and we just ignored the last 4 years of drone warfare. It doesn't exist, and they just charged up with them.
And the Americans are obviously the same way. I mean, they
Yeah.
are completely unable to deal with. You've seen the videos, I'm sure, like I have, of FPV drones just trolling through Victoria
Yes.
Base trying to
Yes.
find something worth hitting, completely uncontested.
Oh yeah, that's what killed me the first day in the Qatar base where you had the secondary radar system and you had that old jihad drone with that moped motor going j-j-j-j-j-j-j. It's slow, it's flying in, it goes gracefully up, it comes right back down, takes out the whole radar bulb, and nobody's shooting at it. Not light arms fire, not a stinger, nothing. It's just got free range. Do whatever you want. There's no air defense of any kind, even small arms air defense. Nothing.
It is amazing to me because, I mean, we know that there are levels of the US military and intelligence that are fully engaged in what's going on in
Right,
Ukraine, right?
right.
The CIA has been running their drone program, right? They openly admit that. The attacks on oil refineries, the attacks on shipping, the CIA bragged in the New York Times that, yeah, we're in charge of all that.
Yeah.
But when we're down to the actual military writ large, obviously, no lessons have been learned. Nothing has been evolved. Nothing has been instituted or institutionalized. Nothing. I mean, maybe that's because they have not felt any real pain over
They
the
are
last
now.
4 years, right? So they were able to fight their comfortable little proxy war against Russia and not worry about lessons learned and how fast warfare was changing with new technology. Well, now the price comes due. And where Iran and Hezbollah are now, I would say is still a year, 2 years back from where the conflict is right now.
Yep.
But that's still a decade ahead of the US at this point. We keep hearing about these war games that are conducted with NATO, with Ukrainian troops, especially drone units involved. And there was this Operation Hedgehog last
Right.
year that we found out about, and there have been repeat of them. And small Ukrainian units with drone components continually best and just obliterate, just humiliate much larger numbers of much, ostensibly much better equipped, in the old sense, the old maneuver warfare
Right.
sense of the war, in war games. And the Ukrainians are like, yeah, we don't want NATO training anymore.
That's a hindrance.
First of all, if we have NATO and trade, if we have training in NATO countries, all our people run away and go AWOL, right?
There's
Right? There's
that.
that. But there's also the point that
50%,
it's not
50% desertion rate.
And actually, Ukrainian commanders have been saying that since 2023, that they have nothing to offer us, right? And it's the Russians and the Ukrainians, right? In the broad sense, that are learning from each other right now. I mean, that's where the conflict is, and so it's not a matter of just stubborn endurance and sacrifice. They are innovating warfare on both sides at
Absolutely.
a truly cruel and brutal pace. There is no morality to this war. It is bloody. It is nasty. Russia does have some rules of engagement. A lot of those have gone away over the course of the war. Some are still there. The Kiev regime has no rules of
Oh,
engagement,
it
right?
didn't from day one.
And so.
Yeah, but I watched the Gotland exercise and these other NATO exercises in 25. And what do you see in all of these? And you're right, you see tanks going in, the infantry
Lining
piled
up
up
and they're
behind the
coming
tank,
up.
one drone away from having mass casualty. No grills, nothing. And on top of that, in Rhein-Main Air Force Base last August, I saw the advertisement for it. They were advertising for people to come out and see the U.S. Army drop a grenade from a drone for the first time. 2025, August 2025, we'll
You
drop our
remember
first grenade.
Hegseth's ridiculous drone propaganda videos
Oh
last
God,
year?
with a mop handle. I mean, if you're on the front lines anywhere on there, you've got to be dying from laughter looking at that. I guess I'm going to find out soon enough, though, if they land the Marines on any of those islands. They're all within FPV drone range, 50-kilometer range. Every one of those islands within drone range.
Stanislav, can I be perfectly honest with you?
Shoot.
I really hope they do. I'm salivating at the prospect. I really hope they're that stupid.
I used to serve with these guys, obviously. Well, not these guys in particular, but
Me too.
and I feel sorry for them, because they're being sent on a suicide mission. It's a meat grinder. I feel sorry for those guys. I don't feel sorry for their commanders. Definitely don't feel sorry for any American politicians, with very few exceptions. They're sending them to die. They're just sending them to die for the ego of a baboon that doesn't know how the hell to get himself out of the mess he's gotten himself into.
I see. I have to object to that characterization because the baboon is a noble animal.
I'll apologize to all the baboons out there.
Thank you.
Macaca.
On behalf of the baboons, I accept your apology from the slur of comparing them to the President of the United States.
Was as good as when the president of Uganda came out when somebody said that Ukraine, back in 21, Ukraine now is as poor as Uganda. He came out, whoa, we're much richer than these people. By the way, speaking of Uganda, Uganda's now threatened to attack Iran for Israel.
The what's next, Somaliland? It's just amazing that, I mean, are these people not paying any attention to what's going on?
I'm not quite sure how they're going to reach Iran, but they've threatened to join the war.
It not only is the US really just humiliating itself, right? Through not learning the lessons of conflict, having no strategy for what they're doing. But at a diplomatic level, I just saw a video that just absolutely shocked me just a couple hours ago. It was Donald Trump speaking about Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince of Saudi
Oh
Arabia.
God, I saw that.
Now, whatever you may think of Mohammed bin Salman, I remember calling him affectionately Mohammed bin Bonesaw.
Wannabe.
And I'm not so sure now. I had thought that over the last few years he has somewhat evolved and matured as a statesman. But what again, whatever you may personally think of him, he is the de facto leader and will be the leader for decades of the largest and most important U.S. Arab Gulf state ally,
Yep,
right? The
absolutely.
home of Mecca, right? And oil export, all of that. And the president of the United States said he didn't think he was going to have to kiss my ass. He didn't think this was going to happen. Well, now he has to kiss my ass. He has to be nice, and he better be nice to me. This is the way diplomacy is done by the United States now. I mean, again, like with the baboons, comparing Trump to a mid-tier mafia thug or warlord would be a disservice to the honorable Italian American organized criminal organizations and others and their personnel over the history of the United States. If the complete collapse of anything even resembling diplomacy. I mean, it's great. I mean, I'm always shocked and horrified by it. But then, I have to remind myself, oh yeah, I'm comfortably sitting outside of that for the last 2 decades, and it's the opponent now, and I should just celebrate it. But all of this is going to have consequences, right? Whenever they're not looking and out of the line, all of the countries of the world are rightly remembering all of these little slights, all of these blackmails and threats and humiliations. I mean, I certainly had no love for the Blinken Sullivan administration, right?
No,
Or any of
none.
the administrations before that. But my God, this administration is atrocious. It's
They've actually, I mean, I'm actually wondering, would Harris have been better? I mean, this is how far we've gone. This is, and I can't stand Harris and Biden and all of these idiots, but
The
now you're
only
going.
difference there is Harris might have continued the Biden policy of firing ballistic missiles into Russia, and we might already have had nuclear Armageddon by now. I mean,
True
that's
enough, true enough.
and in that respect, the lack of ideological, at least, hatred of Russia by Trump and his megalomania may have inadvertently diverted us away from impending nuclear Armageddon on one level and put us into a situation in the Middle East where the US hegemon is facing possibly a more potent strategic defeat than they were facing and then still are facing with Russia and Ukraine.
True, very true. Well put. Very well put. Now, of course, the insanity is doubled though because you've got Tel Aviv. I mean, you had a spokesman for IDF who was threatening to basically off Russian politicians because
Oh yeah,
we
I
see
saw that.
everything. We have
I
control over your internal systems. Are you seriously making that threat? A country that could be a Russian tactical nuclear warhead that's only 75 kilotons, 2.5 Hiroshimas could wipe you off the face of the earth. Do you really want to go down that road to threaten them directly with murdering off the politicians and the leaders
But Israel can
while
probably
losing
get
a
away.
war to everybody around you?
Israel can probably get away with saying shit like that and even doing some stuff, and Russia wouldn't respond. Why? Because Russia is perhaps too mature a leadership, too much the adult in the room, too long-term thinking, right? Too much strategic patience, at least at a gut level. Maybe at a state level, we want that cold-blooded, passionless ability to just shrug all of that like water off a duck's back, like the Chinese do on an even greater level. I, as you know, I was like you, I was born in the United States, right?
Oh no, I was born in Lugansk. I'm
Oh, so you were born in Lugansk. My
I'm straight out of the
apologies. Okay,
SSR.
so you were direct. All right. So, but you did spend a great deal of your life in the United
half
States.
of
And
it.
right. So, but there is an Americanness ingrained in my mental DNA that I know I'll never be able to replace, right? I will never be a Ruski mujik, right? I just it's not there. But there's an American that wants a gut knee-jerk response to all of this.
Oh, believe me, most Russians do
Yeah,
too. They really
do too. But
want a knee-jerk reason right
the
up the
Russian
teeth.
political leadership is more restrained,
Yes.
and the Russian military leadership is extremely pragmatic and methodical.
Yes. Absolutely. The science of war, not the art of war, the science of war.
The science, yes. And almost the industry of war at this point.
Yes. That's what I always love. Oh, Russia is on a war economy. No. 6% of GDP is not a war.
No,
40% of GDP, that's a war economy.
that's a fantasy of Western media that have no idea what's actually going on in this country.
You imagine if Russia was on a full war economy right now? I mean,
No, I have no idea what that would look like. Nor does anyone in the US know what that would look like in the United States.
that'd
The
be like
situation in Russia is only marginally different on a level of how it impacts the daily lives of Russians, this 4-year conflict, as it was for Americans during Gulf War I and II, meaning it doesn't impact their daily lives in any real credit, way.
Well,
And
there's an added, I will make a difference. There is a difference. I remember very well because I was serving and I was actually taking some university courses. So I was done with the university courses early in the morning and I was driving in when 9/11 happened. And I was listening to, I didn't even know 9/11 happened because I was listening to music on a disc. And I walk in and everybody, I'm like, hey, how everybody doing? And everyone's looking at me like, what the? Hell, I'm like, whoa, what happened? And then, oh, and the little television set, and everybody's around the television set. It's like, got it. What happened to the rest of America? Everything shut down. Everybody ran home. All the schools closed down in every single tiny little village and hamlet, wherever it happened to be. All the politicians, everybody ran home. They were all scared. You don't get that in Russia. You got drones striking into a residential building. People go, well, get those bastards. Keep going. And society just, yeah, okay. And it doesn't have the same effect.
yeah, there is a, well, Russians have been through the 90s. They've been through the Chechen Civil War. They've been through the terrorism that was produced by that for a decade plus, right? They've been through the economic suffering, right? Several Great Depressions rolled together in the 90s.
Yeah, I'd say the memory of World War II. I mean, that's ingrained
The
in every
memory of
single
World War II.
family.
But I mean, throughout its entire history, if there's one, if you had to roll Russian national character into one adjective, I think it would be long suffering.
Well, Dostoevsky even wrote about, the suffering of the human soul, You're
There
not suffering, you're not
is a
growing.
reason why Dostoevsky is superior to Tolstoy. If you had to rank authors in every and any conceivable way.
Hemingway and Mark Twain and the rest of them have a little further to go to get up to that level. Maybe Twain, I think, was maybe on the level of Tolstoy, the American version, or maybe close to it, but definitely not on the level of Dostoevsky. I remember struggling as a teenager through The Possessed. That was, well, not teenager, I was, I guess, 19. I was at university, but
When I was a young teenager, my dream was to one day learn to properly, because I came from a Russian American family that didn't speak any Russian anymore, to learn enough Russian to be able to read Записки под землей, notes from the underground in Russian.
It's yeah, I read Dostoevsky in English. I'll admit that because I was doing Russian lit classes in a US university. And I've got the book. I haven't had the time to sit down and just read it in Russian. And to read it as a seasoned adult instead of a
Yes.
19-year-old going, "Oh jeez, I don't, you don't have the depth of character when you're 19, but life just hasn't thrown enough crap in your face for most 19-year-olds that you're more worried about where am I going to get drunk with my friends on the weekend than this long suffering of life. That the long suffering usually at 19 is the hangover afterwards. Not, anything in depth and philosophical. So yeah, I definitely need to go back.
I think my extensive reading of Dostoevsky in those early teenage years helped propel me along my teenage goth subculture course.
I was an odd child. I started reading a lot when I was about 12 and a half, 13, and but I didn't go into the teenage books, even the sci-fi. I went straight into the adult sci-fi. The fantasy books, and then one of my favorite books when I guess I was still 12, was Machiavelli, Le Prince. light reading for the average teenager.
Which is worth reading even today, by the way,
Oh, absolutely.
for
Yeah.
someone
It's
who.
human nature. I mean, that's all he is. All he's doing is showing you human nature. Not the best side of human nature, but the reality of it. Yeah, absolutely.
There's
Absolutely.
some people out there that for some reason seem to believe that being a cynic in both the modern and the more philosophical sense of the word is a bad thing, and I've never understood that.
Hey, there's the Russian saying, "Всегда может быть хуже." It can
Yeah,
always be worse.
be
That's the
worse.
ru that, and that's, by the way, how Russians survive any suffering. We just remind ourselves it can always be worse.
That's actually even more fatalism than cynicism, but the two dovetail together.
It gets us through in the end. Oh, it didn't get worse. Why? Hey, God helped us out. It didn't get worse. Everything will be fine now.
Pleasant surprise if it doesn't get worse.
Yes, you are. Sometimes you're even upset. Like, what? I was planning for so much worse. Which, by the way, was the sanctions, if you remember. When all holy hell of sanctions came out and everybody was
Oh,
afraid and paranoid, and then they went, that's it?
I remember, right? I still have a, I made a big long because I was using Twitter much more in those days, but I big a long predictive list at the start of the conflict, and one of them was that however hard the next couple of years would be with sanctions, that Russia would emerge from it decoupled from the West in a better economic position, and then it might be difficult. But the problem, it hasn't been difficult.
Oh.
My wife and I said we need to make a household economic plan. We need to quickly make emergency plans, things that we will do without in progressive layers as the situation gets worse. And it never, we never had to draw on any of that at all.
In 2012, 13, I'm sorry. So I was director of supply chain for Halliburton for Eurasia. And I'm watching the news at the end of 2013, 12 to into 13. Let's see, the coup was in 13 or 14? 14.
2014.
Yeah, so 2013, at the end of 2013, I'm looking at the news and I call my procurement teams together. It's like, look, here's everything we're buying from the US that we haven't touched for one reason or another. Find me alternatives because all of this is going to get sanctioned. And chemicals, specialty chemicals, things like that. Actually, we found them pretty damn quickly and saved a lot of money. But it was stuff that, oh, why do you need to look? Because there wasn't that push. The church teaches that God sends you enemies to get you to do the things you should have been doing anyways. So these are one of the things we should have been doing anyways, but we weren't. And I was looking at it like, damn, we need to do this. And yeah, it was actually much easier to do than anybody feared. And you get done a couple months later and go, geez, why didn't we do this a year ago?
Why did Russia ever join the World Trade Organization to
Oh,
begin
that's a whole different issue.
with?
Nobody, that's a question for Medvedev, because that nobody
Medvedev
understands that.
1.0. Medvedev
Yes,
1.0.
yes, yes. Okay, over under your personal opinion on Medvedev, because I can't make up my mind. Is
Yeah.
this the real Medvedev we're
I don't
seeing?
know. I honestly don't know. I honestly don't know. See, the Medvedev that will always be burned in my mind is that moment in the early 2000s of Medvedev when he was filmed sh doing the shuffle dance to American Boy. And I will never be able to purge that neoliberal pro-Western Medvedev from my mind entirely. And whether he somewhere along the way underwent a true Damascene conversion,
He may
or
have.
whether he is fulfilling a role, the new Zhirinovsky, right? Because Zhirinovsky had to be replaced by somebody.
I've offered, but I haven't taken my position
Yeah,
me up on that yet.
I don't know. I really don't know. I tell you what, sometime he actually goes overboard even for me now, which is saying a lot.
The image for Medvedev 1.0 was when he was awarding Pugacheva some prize, and he
Oh
was like
my
a little
God.
schoolboy. It's like, put him in shorts and a short shirt, put a little school uniform on him. That's what that burned that image in me. And she's got this disdainful look upon her face toward him. It's just the president of Russia. I mean, she's just a singer with a massive gambling debt, but hey, who's counting?
Wasn't she one of the ones who fled to Israel because she said she didn't want to live in a country that went to war against its neighbors?
But she's not Jewish, but her husband, who's like 30 years younger than her, he's Jewish, and now they're living in Cyprus, and they're feeling hard for Israel. Their heart flutters, but they're in Cyprus now. Gulkin's got so many criminal cases against him for literally giving money to the Ukrainian military and all this. He can't go back, so. But now they're living outside of Russia, and they're not making much money
Hopefully, justice finds them someday in the form of an ice pick.
Well, no, for people like that, that's not good. Poverty's much worse.
Maybe.
On that, Mark, thank you for your time. Thank you, and I look forward to when you get coming over to my place for a cookout.
I'll look forward to that as well. That
Burn
it'll just
some
I'm
meat
sure it'll essentially be the same thing with just some alcohol involved.
and more people.
Yeah, more
Well, in
people.
live audience, maybe somebody will videotape. So, thank you everybody for joining. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll have more laughable comment. Well, okay, when we're laughing, just to get this straight, it's laughing through
Black
tears.
humor. Yeah,
Yes,
exactly.
it's black humor. Now we're gonna have the BLM on our case. Black humor. You're appropriating our humor. So, anyways, have fun, everybody. Have a good rest of your weekend. Cheers.
До свидания.